Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Colt Romberger's father served in Vietnam and it changed his life. His health was impacted by exposure to Agent Orange. Colt is a veteran of the Iraq War and he's on a journey across the country on horseback. And it's all to honor his father and raise awareness about Agent Orange. Colt Romberger joins us now from a mountain range near Fontana, California. Welcome, Colt.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me on today.
I'm doing well. Tell me about your dad.
My dad, number one, he's the best dad in the world. You know, I guess every kid probably says that, but I'm riding a horse 3,000 miles to honor his memory and those like him. And he's a wonderful man. He served in Vietnam from November 70 to November 71. He was stationed at Da Nang. And it was 40 years later to the year, 2011, that he was diagnosed with a brain disease that took his life in 2015.
Did he know, was he in the Marines, Army?
He was in the Air Force. He was a aircraft analyst. It was his job to find the problem with the aircraft before it happened in the sky, is how he would put it. And he was stationed at Da Nang, which is a large air base there in Vietnam.
My father
was also one of the... Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
My father was stationed at Da Nang, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
thank you for his service. I hope.
Wouldn't it be something if they crossed paths, huh?
My dad was in the 366th Tactical Fighter Wing, so you can ask your dad if what unit he was in.
Colt, my dad is gone too.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I know. So we have a few things in common, and I want to talk to you about when you were growing up. Did your dad tell you stories about that time, or was he more silent about it?
You know, my dad, he liked to tell the funny stories, going down to the NCO club and, you know, having a good time and things of that nature. Nothing too dark. When his brain disease started getting more advanced, he couldn't really control his emotions much anymore. And that's when, you know, he would start telling more about things that had happened when he was in Vietnam.
So how old are you when this starts? I mean, are you able to sort of understand those stories? You're old enough to process them at that point?
Yeah, I'm 32. My dad, you know, he passed away in 2015, so I was old enough to understand the stories, obviously, when he started really telling them. You know, one thing to a test of my dad's fortitude is, you know, a few months before he passed away, you know, I went to him about wanting to do this horseback ride because one of his bucket list items. I grew up on a horse ranch, and that's why my name's Colt.
Right.
And he always wanted to do a cross country horseback ride. And my sister and I thought about doing this to help raise awareness for Vietnam veterans. You know, we asked my dad, and my dad gave a big thumbs up because he really couldn't talk that much anymore, and because he couldn't control his tongue muscles. And you know, he just wanted to make sure that I wasn't just doing it for him, but I was doing it for everyone like him. And you know, he asked him if he would have wished he didn't serve his country, you know, to avoid what he was going through. He said no. You know, he was very proud to serve his country. It's not something he had envisioned for himself. He wanted to work a ranch, you know, horse ranch. You know, he grew up on a horse farm there in Pennsylvania, but he never hated his service, I guess you'd say. He never looked down upon his service. He never wished he didn't serve.
Right.
So that's my dad.
Did he have an awareness of Agent Orange exposure, or was that something he found out because he started having health problems?
You know, it's kind of a frustrating subject, I'm sure, especially for a lot of Vietnam veterans out there, and that's why we're trying to do this awareness mission. But my dad had three things that was attributable to Agent Orange before he got the brain disease. He had, and I always pronounce it wrong, but he had chlorine or chloric acne on his chest. He had diabetes, and he was a very fit person, and he had heart disease. And to my knowledge, the VA never brought up exposure to Agent Orange to him. They never, and I'm not down in the VA. The VA, you know, it does the best they can, I believe. I truly believe that. But, you know, it was never brought up that this might be related to Agent Orange. And it wasn't until he had a car accident, and he knew something was going on, but he wouldn't tell us. And when he had a car accident, he told the state police, he said, I can't move my eye. And we sat down with him and we're like, wait, what's going on? And he's like, it takes my mind a long time to move my eyes, a lateral and vertical. He has to move his head and it makes him dizzy. And it's when we went down to the VA, to get that checked, that's when they asked him, were you ever exposed to Agent Orange when you were in Vietnam? And my dad's answer was, everybody was exposed to Agent Orange in Vietnam. Hmm. And they said, well, we believe you have progressive supranuclear palsy, which is a very rare brain disease, but it's neurological. And because of that, and PSP, and this is the thing that I still don't understand right now, but PSP is not on the presumptive list. The VA has about 50 different diseases, a lot of cancers, neurological problems. But they have to have so many data points before they can put it on the presumptive list. Like, a bladder cancer is not on the presumptive list, but a prostate cancer is, it took a year for the VA to come back and say, yes, this is related to Agent Orange. And, then they gave him 100% disability, but he could have been getting disability, and he was such a hardworking guy. He could have been getting that from the other three things for years. My dad first had that rash in his chest when he was in Vietnam.
Right.
And they told him it was speckled heat was what the Air Force told him, it was speckled heat.
Right.
And, which maybe that's what they thought it was, but it never went away. He had a rash in his chest his entire life. So,
I want to talk about the journey you're taking itself and the Horace and your crew. But first, what kind of connections are you making with other Vietnam veterans as you travel? And what are you hearing them say about Agent Orange and about Vietnam?
One of our, we're doing this ride to raise awareness. Using the horse as a platform to come across the country, get people to ask questions. And the question they ask is, what are you doing? Like, why are you riding a horse,
Right.
and it's a perfect platform to say, well, I'm taking this horse to D.C., Washington, D.C., from the Pacific Ocean. And, this is why, it's for Vietnam veterans that are suffering. And so that's the first awareness project, what we're trying to do. The second thing we're trying to do is we're trying to be a voice for Vietnam veterans that might not feel they have a voice. And we've been interviewing Vietnam veterans along the way. We had our first interview a few days ago back in Pasadena, when we were in Pasadena coming through. Mm-hmm. And he was a wonderful, wonderful man. The Vietnam Veterans of America found him for us. We've been working with the VVA very closely. And his name is Zach Earp. He was a Marine in Vietnam. And one of the things that got me, it choked me up pretty bad, is he said he stepped on a landmine in Vietnam, and the truck went by, and he has shrapnel from his feet to the top of his head from that landmine. And he said that that happened in 1968, and in 2011 he was diagnosed with prostate cancer. Then a month later he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, and then a year later he got diagnosed with heart disease. And he said to me, he goes, it still feels like Vietnam's trying to kill me.
Wow.
And a lot of these guys, he said, I say all the time, when I see these Vietnam veterans, I always say welcome home to them. Because when I was a little kid, I used to hear my dad say that to other Vietnam veterans, like when they would do parades, for the VFW. My dad was an honor guard member. And I asked him, years later, I said, hey, why do you always say that to Vietnam veterans? And he said to me, he goes, because nobody said that to us when we came home. And
if you're just tuning in, my guest, Colt Romberger, he's riding on horseback. You can hear a little bit of that in the background. He's in California now, riding his horse to Washington, D.C., raising awareness for Vietnam veterans exposed to Agent Orange, being a voice for those who are voiceless. You can follow him on expeditionorange.org. There's a blog. There's some photos there. There's a place to donate and help support the journey. And Colt, let's talk about some of the details of how you're, how much ground are you covering? How you're sort of dividing this up and planning it out?
We, as soon as we get across these San Angeles Mountains, we we'll be able to make a little bit better time because it kind of flattens out for us for a while. Right now, we've been averaging about 12 to 15 miles a day. We had one down day this past Friday that really gave us some time to reassess some things. You know, because until you do something like this, the Air Force has the 7 P's, you know, the proper preparation and planning prevents poor performance. Right. So, you know, as much as that is possible, we try to do, but, you know, there's always things that you have to try, you figure out along the way.
Right.
So we've been averaging about 12 to 15 miles. Today's going to be another 15 to 16 mile day. We're going to be hitting really close to 5,000 feet elevation, probably tomorrow. We'll get to about 3,000 feet today. And you really got to watch the horse. And there's, you know, because I ride about an hour and I dismount and I walk about a half an hour, you know, to take weight off of his back and, you know, helps me stretch my legs out as well. But, you know, it's just, we're hoping to get across these mountains in the next 4 days. Our original plans and we're changing our map right now. And just because of finding out how the elevation is really difficult on the horse and myself, I guess. We're going to swing. We were going to hit Vegas and then cross over the Rockies a little higher up in the Utah and Colorado, but we're actually going to swing south now. Kit Carson had some scout trails that came around the bottom part of the Rockies, so we will be cutting through Arizona and New Mexico, and then up into Colorado using that route. The Rockies too far north is going to be too much for us to get over, and it's not so much It is the elevation, but it's also, you know, the highways have just taken over America. Any back road that cuts across a mountain, I've ran into that on the San Angeles Mountains, is if it was a back road, they turned it into a highway. And you can't ride a horse on a highway. You won't last very long.
Right.
So that's one of the logistical problems that we found. So it adds miles. It definitely adds miles because of all the switchbacks that we've been encountering.
Right.
But
so
it is what it is.
Yeah, tell me about your horse. Tell me your horse's name and how you're taking care of your horse on the journey.
My horse, I have three horses that are I'll be rotating through.
Okay.
Gus is my primary horse. He's a field dust bred horse. So people say, what's that? You know, it's not a very well-known breed yet. Basically, it's a pre-1939 quarter horse. It's before they added a bunch of thoroughbred into the horse. So there's two ranches, the 2T Ranch, owned by Tommy Tunyai and Michelle Tunyai. They breed him. He's the one that invented this horse, actually brought this horse back. And then the Snodgrass Cattle Company is the other place. The horse I'm riding is from the Snodgrass Cattle Company out of Joshua, Texas.
Okay.
So he donated the horse for the ride. Very, very, very amazing horse. He was green broke, never been off a ranch. And 15 days after, I put about 15 days on him out here in the LA area. I rode him right down Hollywood Boulevard a few days ago. Right, I mean, a 7-foot avatar came running up to him, you know, and he looked at it. And the biggest thing about the field dust horses is you have to bond with them. And once you bond with them and they trust you, they'll walk through fire for you.
Mm.
So it's an amazing horse. And then the other two, it's another steel dust bred horse. His name's Solo. And then I have a quarter horse named Copper. So I'll be rotating through those guys. If Gus gets a little, you know, tired or, you know, he needs a rest, then I have a Wrangler, a Midwest equine out of Springfield, Missouri. She has the backups at her place, and she owns those, and she'll trailer them out to me wherever I'm at, and then trailer back the horse that I'm using. So we have it pretty figured out that way.
Right. Now, you spent time in Iraq as well. Were you in the Air Force?
Yes.
So
I've been in the Air Force. May 1st, actually, the day we launched was my 10th anniversary in the Air Force.
How much of your dad's life and stories he told you and the way you sort of watched him growing up helped make that decision to join?
You know, I always say people end up a product of their environment. I really think it's true. You know, my dad was... You know, he served in the Air Force, and then he was a game warden for 22 years. And I joined the Air Force, and I'm a police officer out. I'm in the Air Force Reserves, and I'm a reserve police officer with the city of Pasadena, California. So, you know, I follow my dad's footsteps very closely. And it's because, you know, I really admired him, and I always looked up to my dad. You know, he was my hero. And I always, not saying that I want to be him, you know, but I always loved everything that he did and everything he stood for. And I kind of mirror that, I guess, in my life. Didn't realize it so much until I look back upon it and say, wow, you know, I'm kind of like my dad's shadow. So, and I'm proud the heck to be able to say that.
What kind of conversations were you having, for example, when you were getting ready to deploy to Iraq? What did he tell you?
My dad, is a couple of days before I was getting ready to get on the airplane. I was in the Air Force, but I volunteered for my deployment, and I got sent overseas with the 82nd Airborne Division. So I was going with a line Army infantry unit as an Air Force guy. And that didn't make my dad very happy. But he pulled me aside and he goes, "The only piece of advice I can give you is don't do anything you'll regret." And I was like, okay. And that's the only piece of advice he gave me.
What do you think he meant?
You know, my dad always said when I was younger and things, and I hear him talking to other guys, you know, he had a friend, he was a Army, I think he was a long-range reconnaissance patrol, and he had terrible flashbacks, you know, and my dad would get phone calls in the middle of the night from his wife, and, you know, he would be out in the woods somewhere hiding, you know, he'd get really bad flashbacks, and I remember my dad said to me, he goes, "You know, I don't have flashbacks, because I never did anything I regretted," and I don't want to assume what that means, you know, I don't know what his friend's story was, but, you know, things happen in Vietnam, things happen in Iraq, Afghanistan, where, you know, people do things that they end up regretting. And, I guess my dad held a higher or high moral standard, I guess. And, you know, that's the biggest piece of advice, really the only piece of advice. You know, he knew that the U.S. Army is not going to send you, or the U.S. military is not going to send you over without giving you training, mm-hmm. you know, and, we got fabulous training. Before I deployed, and that's just one piece of advice he gave me: is don't do anything you regret.
That was the thing that he thought was most important to send you off with.
Yep.
Colt, you got a lot of time to think on the back of your horse. What are you thinking about? What do you find yourself returning to mentally again and again?
I talk to my sister a lot because she's been handling a lot of the website and Facebook and things of that nature, and she handles a lot of the posting of stuff. But, you know, a lot of the time, I'd say 85% of the time riding is trying to make sure I'm taking him someplace safe, you know. It's been a lot of road riding, a lot of, you know, trucks. People just don't have courtesy of the road. You know, they see a horse on the side of the road, and they get so close that if they put their hand out, they'd probably smack him on the butt, you know. And it's kind of irritating, but I get it. You know, people just don't know. You know, I wish they had a little more courtesy, but you probably see it when people are riding bicycles. They get really close to a bicyclist, you know. I think a lot about why I'm doing this. I mean, it's not easy, you know, and I did endurance riding, and I've ridden 100 miles in a day, you know, when I was younger. But it's grueling. It really is. It's painful. That's why I'm getting off, you know, every hour. Cause, you know, 15, 20. Eventually, we're going to get ourselves up to 25 miles a day. And there are times, you know, that I'm like, I don't, you know, I'm over a week now into it. I'm 2 months into riding every day. And, you know, your back starts hurting and everything. And I'm just like, nope, my dad never gave up, you know, his entire life on anything. And I met, you know, like I said, I had an interview with Mr. Zach Earp, you know, last week in Pasadena. And, you know, he walks with a walker because of the shrapnel. And he never gave up on anything. And I, you know, maintain that mental fortitude and persevering and pushing through this, because I know that, you know, it's radio stations like yourself. It's the news. It's the New York Times, the Washington Post that have covered our story. You know, this is going to get the word out for these guys that are suffering, you know, these thousands and thousands and thousands of heroes that are suffering in silence because nobody has their ear, and, or they don't have anybody's ear, I guess I should say. And, we're just, you know, our little mission here, I'm hoping to change that. And that's all I can do. And we'll see how big it gets. And, you know, hopefully, I talk to a lot of young kids. You know, young kids love horses. And I always ask them when they come up, you know, they want to take a picture. And I was like, can we get a picture with your horse? I'm like, you sure can. But let me ask you a favor in return. And they're like, oh, what's that? You know, I'm like, have you ever heard of the Vietnam War? And it's surprising. A lot of kids are like, no. And I'm not just talking like 8-year-old kids. I'm talking like 14-year-old, you know, kids that are walking home from school. And I say, well, look up the Vietnam War and look up Agent Orange. I said, we have a lot of veterans, you know, thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of Vietnam veterans that are dying from a poisoning that they got. And they're like, really? You know, like these. And if I can help the younger generation learn about what these heroes are going for, then I serve my mission. And that's the kind of stuff that goes through my head, you know, on a daily basis when I'm out on the trail or I'm out on the road right now.
Colt Romberger, come back anytime throughout your journey. Talk to us. Keep us posted. Take care of yourself. Keep going. Thank you for everything today. And hi to Gus. Colt Romberger is riding horseback 3,000 miles across the country. He's headed to Washington, D.C. He's in California now. You can follow him on expeditiononrange.org, raising awareness for Vietnam veterans exposed to Agent Orange.